Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is the John Oakley Show podcast.
On a great day for talk radio. Otherwise, we were just talking about the importance of referrals from doctors. This became a celebrated court case. Whether it goes further up the food chain, anyone's guess on that matter, and others dealing with mental health. Oren Amate is our go-to guy, registered psychologist and media commentator, and he's joined the Oakley Show at Global News Radio 640 Toronto. Oren, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. Thank you, John.
Oren, I've got to ask you, just out of curiosity, I don't know if you followed that story about the hearing before the Court of Appeal here in Ontario that upheld a divisional court ruling that says doctors must refer when it comes to matters that might even militate against their conscience, for example, assisted dying, abortion, so on and so forth. A group of doctors had taken it up to the Court of Appeal, and they lost. They're obligated, doctors are, to give referrals for medical services, even if they do go against their religious beliefs. How do you feel about that?
Well, if they could show that they were doing more harm than good, like actually medically, then I could understand and think they have a case. When it comes to acting against their conscience, they're not being demanded to do the procedure themselves. So I think we have an ethical duty to refer somebody, you know, refer the person to somebody else who can do it.
All right. Even if they're against the practice per se, a referral, I get it. It's sort of secondhand, or there's a bit of distancing there. But if they want no party to that, don't they have rights of their own? That conscious rights, conscientious rights that are guaranteed by the charter that should have been upheld.
Well, that's a charter question versus a professional question because our goal is to do no harm or to put the public or the individual patient's well-being at a premium. And again, if we can't show that it's medical harm, if we believe, that, because this is not a black and white question. So if we are causing harm, for example, by denying a procedure, then would that not trump our charter rights? Because we've taken an oath, so to speak, an ethical, undertaking to uphold the patient's well-being. So, and you can argue, well, am I really upholding it? Well, if that's what they're saying is in their best interest, if they can be shown to be to be competent and to be able to make their decisions, I do think that they do have to, abide by their requests. Again, unless they could show that really they are causing harm, or they're not capable of making that decision, they're not competent, they're not old enough.
Is there any danger that this could fall into the realm of government compulsion, and who knows where that can lead?
I'm always worried about government overstepping their bounds. And if we're compelled to do things that we don't think, if we can show that it's not in the best interest, I think we should be able to state our case. And if we can show that it's not in the public's best interest, then I would hope that we have an ability to fight against it. In this particular case, I'm just thinking that, again, if I were forced to do something that I thought was wrong, then that would be a problem. But if I can simply just refer someone else, I don't see that as an issue, saying I'm not going to do it. I could even tell my patient, this is why I don't think it's right, or this is why I think you might want to reconsider it. But I don't think I can exert any pressure beyond that. And I think that they have the right to be referred to someone who will do it.
All right. So I was like, down the hall, that guy. I don't know. Does this one go higher to the Supreme Court? Any idea?
That, I don't know. That's above my pay grade.
Okay. Dr. Oren Amate with us, registered psychologist and media commentator. Hey, let's speak to the Supreme Court story. Justice Clement Gascon, he suffered a panic attack last week and was MIA for a while. There was great concern from the family and the police. They tracked him down. No harm, no foul. But he's planning to retire. He announced that earlier last month. And the Chief Justice basically said it won't affect his ability to continue on the bench. Apparently he's suffering this panic attack as a result of depression. He's also had a change in medication. Is he still in good standing on the bench? Won't it compromise maybe rulings or so on and so forth?
If he wasn't getting treatment for it, whether it's medication or through psychotherapy or preferably both, and if he wasn't, if he was in a state where he was incapacitated, which if in the middle of a panic attack, you cannot think, you can barely keep your, you know, your thoughts together at, in any capacity, let alone trying to make these high level, you know, thought processes occur. So if he were doing that or trying to make a ruling in that state, then I would say that's, you know, that's improper. But being, feeling overwhelmed temporarily by a condition like this and learning to cope with it, and being able to, you know, ride it out. It only lasts about 10 or 15 minutes. That will not necessarily detract from his ability to function on the bench. But he would have to be honest with himself. And if he was having one, he would have to take a recess. He can't, again, you cannot function in the midst of a full-blown panic attack. So if he tried to do that, that would be a concern. But I don't think that should prevent him. You know, again, if he has the safeguards in place, you know, takes a recess, composes himself, and is able to return to the bench, you know, within a half an hour, for example, I don't think that would be an issue. If he tried to return, he wasn't in the proper state, and it was clouding his judgment and his ability to, you know, to make these kinds of decisions, then I would be concerned.
All right. Well, you know, at least the fact that it's come to the fore tells us that there's less stigma attached to that, as opposed to what happened to Justice LaDain, I think, back in the mid to late 80s, where he was basically turfed from the bench because he also suffered from depression and anxiety, mental illness in a nutshell. And that's the beat I wanted to dwell on here for a moment or two, because Global News has a series, and this is the third installment that airs tonight, exploring the Canadian healthcare system and the financial burden it places on many Canadian families in order to ensure their kids are receiving the mental health care they need. It's interesting that it focuses on...
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
And children primarily. Seems to me child psychiatry is becoming a bigger field. Would you concur?
I would, and I'm concerned about child psychiatry expanding too much. I think we need to focus more on child psychology. Now, this could be self-serving because that is my profession, but psychiatry, you know, by nature, it's not for everybody, but it is more of a medical model, and trying to reduce all of children's issues to something that can be dealt with, you know, through, let's say, medication, I am very concerned. And we know that. I mean, for the last three decades at least, if not four, we have seen medicine being used, what I would consider to be recklessly in many cases, with children or with youth. Medication that was meant for adults, was meant for certain contexts, and yet it's being used with children in a different, you know, for in a different capacity. That's worrisome. I think we do need to spend more time and money on children's mental health, but we should do it through a psychotherapeutic or psychological or supportive mechanism, not simply medication.
Well, you know, in this Ipsos study that was done, a poll for Global News exclusively, 51% of Canadians believe mental health services should be covered for those without insurance of their own, and a psychologist can run them, you know, 175 a visit, so it's obviously expensive. What's the situation here in Ontario? Is this covered by OHIP? Do you have to take out private insurance plans through employers, perhaps? How does that work?
Yes, so there is no, you know, OHIP does not cover psychological services. If you can get in to see a psychiatrist or a GP, a general practitioner, who does some type of supportive therapy, psychiatrists can be qualified to do, you know, real psychotherapy, but mostly family doctors, it's just talking, you know, having an hour just to chat, and they get booked up really quickly because it's such, you know, there are so few people who are doing that. So if you want to see a psychologist or another type of psychotherapist, you do have to pay out of pocket unless you have private insurance. Much of the private insurance is like $300 or $500. Some companies have what's called an EAP or an employee assistance program that you'll get 3 to 5 sessions if you're lucky. These are not with psychologists usually. They're with, you know, people with far less experience. And once you're finished that, well, now they say we'll refer you to a, you know, psychologist where you have to pay out of pocket. So we do not have coverage for people who, you know, who do need this type of service. And ironically, when we're worried about costs, we know that mental, you know, let's say mental illness or any type of mental illness related issue it deprives the economy, you know, far more than any other condition out there. Like people who are either missing work or they're not able to function at their level, that is having an impact on the economy. And if we invested in trying to mitigate that, rather than trying to, pay for it after the fact, it would be much better.
Well, then let me ask you finally, because there are, the whole brouhaha surrounding cutbacks to public health. But by the same token, Christine Elliott, the health minister, saying they've earmarked more money for mental health. Where do we stand on that? Are we net going to be beneficiaries of more public health funding for mental illness or less?
Unfortunately, a lot of the times the funding goes to administration, it goes to research, it goes to places like CAMH, where they are doing some studies, they are paying the bills of certain people, but they are not going to the frontline workers, to the services, let's say at school, for example, where you can try to deal with the issue before it becomes a crisis. Providing children with supportive systems, helping them learn better coping mechanisms, or having, again, outreach programs where people can go before it becomes a crisis. That's the key thing. And it's not going there. And I haven't heard any word specifically of how that money is going to be used beyond the traditional, where, I know they're claiming that they're going to have some more, outreach workers or frontline workers, but usually it's like a fraction of what is needed, and it mostly goes to administration and research.
Well, that's misguided then. We'll hope, keep our fingers crossed. Obviously, we'll update periodically and check in with you, Oren. I appreciate your time as always.
And I always appreciate being given the opportunity to speak about these, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Oren Amate, registered psychologist and media commentator.
Thanks for listening to the John Oakley Show podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you get your on-demand audio.